Well, the biggest thing that we preach is that the most important training variable is consistency. And so if you can do something consistently and it has the right pieces of the recipe, that's going to be the most important thing. It's not going and doing crazy stuff. It's not trying to murder yourself with training. It's consistency over a long time, and consistency over 3 years has obviously paid off for you. And so I'm happy to hear that, especially that's something that you listed in your outline of like, this is something that I know I can do, and you're able to check the boxes every week. That's huge. That is the biggest thing for long-term progress.
Nick Larson here, host of the Birdshot Podcast, the show that brings you conversations, stories, and traditions from all across the uplands. The Birdshot Podcast is presented by Onyx Hunt and supported by folks just like you via our Patreon community. If you want to stay up to date and not miss any of our upcoming episodes, be sure to subscribe and follow the show in your podcast player or on YouTube, wherever you're listening or watching today. Tap that button for me. Thank you for doing so. And with that said, let's get into today's conversation on the Birdshot Podcast. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of the Birdshot Podcast presented by Onyx Hunt. Your host, Nick, here, checking in with a couple of updates before we get to our full conversation with Todd Baumgartner of Pack Mule Training Co. If you're watching this and not just listening, you can see behind me, there's no snow outside the Birdshot Podcast studios, which is the first time in a while I've been able to say that. That means spring is here, and I'm thinking about turkey season. If all goes according to plan, I will be hitting the woods this weekend with my boys for the first time this year. So really hoping to get out into the turkey woods soon. And with that in mind, I wanted to mention the promo code we have for Meadow Creek Mounts. If you caught the last episode on the show, we interviewed Greg Mayhair of Meadow Creek Mounts. You can use the promo code BSP10 to save 10% on a mount or a red dot sight if you don't need a mount from Meadow Creek Mounts. Greg sent out the Vortex Viper red dot sight and his special custom fit mount for my Mossberg SA28. The boys and I got that set up. It was really easy. We took it out and got it all dialed in this week. Can't wait to hit the woods with it, but worked out really, really well. And again, as we talked about in the episode with Greg, I like having it out on the rib versus where my gun is drilled and tapped. And that's kind of what Meadow Creek does. So really, really love the setup. Hopefully we'll get to put it to the test for real this weekend, and I'll let you all know how that goes. But promo code BSP10, Meadow Creek Mounts. Check that out if you like. Now, today's conversation with Todd of Pack Mule Training Co. I asked Todd, which you'll hear about in the show, to put together a basic upland hunter off-season program. He sent that to me. That's going to be available to you via link in the show notes, maybe an opt-in form or drop in your email address. Check the show notes for that. You will find it there. PDF download with a guide on mobility, strength, and conditioning, aerobic conditioning, rucking, which we'll talk about quite a bit on today's episode. Todd laid it all out, kept it pretty simple. If you've got questions, you can obviously direct those to him, but we've only got a few more months and we will all be hitting the field once again, which is exciting, but it's also time to use to our advantage to get in shape so we can hit the field ready to go with our bird dogs this fall. And that reminds me, I've got some puppy news too, but I'll save that for an upcoming episode. Nothing imminent yet, but it's looking good. So I'm very, very excited for this off season and thinking about next fall already. Check the link in the show notes for Todd's Upland Hunter off season basic training program. get out there, get after it. Hope you enjoyed today's conversation. And with that said, let's welcome in Todd Baumgartner of Pack Mule Training Co.
All right. Welcome back to another episode of the Birdshot Podcast, everyone, presented by Onyx Hunt. Today, we are joined by Todd Baumgartner, founder of Pack Mule Training Co. and strength coach who spent nearly 20 years helping hunters, athletes, and elite military units get stronger, move better, and stay in the field longer. Todd, you grew up hunting, and I know you're still a hunter. We'll get into that a little bit today, but we're going to talk about what upland hunters can do between now and call it September 1, whenever our season starts, to hit the field a little bit more prepared this fall. I'm looking forward to it, and very excited to have you on the show today. Thanks for joining me.
Yeah, man. No, I'm glad to be here. I was pumped to get the opportunity because, you know, like we were talking on the phone the other day, I think you guys are underserved from a fitness standpoint. So it's been one of my missions for this year to get more training information out to upland hunters so they can go enjoy themselves more and do it for longer. So I'm really appreciative of being here.
Heck yeah. That's the goal today. And just to give a little bit of background, sort of what led Todd to being on the show today. Time flies. That's for sure. I went back to look, and it was 3 years ago that I interviewed Jordan Wilcher, who was doing some coaching and training with you alongside at that time. And we got into this stuff a little bit, and I've been, as I told you when we were chatting last week, I took some principles and some of the core stuff that really Jordan really helped me work through at that time. That was probably a classic case of, you know, I'm a dad of two boys and running a couple businesses and just really busy trying to figure out how to squeeze all this stuff in.
Sure.
And again, just having Jordan there to kind of bounce ideas off of and have him really steer me in the right direction to put it clearly. That has led me on a path these last 3 years where I have made, I would say, some very significant strides in like my fitness and maintenance all year round. And we can get into this a little bit later, but it's been a really fun run these last 3 years. And when I say that, I'm not trying to scare anybody. Like, I'm not doing extreme fitness. I'm doing a few simple things that I'm able to kind of run year round. And I feel like it's really improved not only just my general fitness and ability, but it's made my days in the field in the fall more enjoyable, which I know is at the core of what you do. And it's one of the things you preach. So I was thrilled, and I have to give a shout out to one of our listeners, Dean. I bumped into him at Pheasant Fest a couple of weeks ago, and I know he's been working with you. I know there's other listeners that picked up on what you guys do when we interviewed Jordan 3 years ago, that you've worked with as well. So I know there's some listeners out there that are familiar with you and your work. And again, just wanted to kind of get you on the show for the first time and get a little bit about your background and talk about fitness for upland hunting. And again, this time of year, it's March 31st today when Todd and I are chatting. So we've got a long runway here to build up to to get in fall shape. And I don't know, I'm excited about it.
Yeah. No, I mean, first, I mean, you sent over your outline of what you've been doing, and, you know, I looked at it, I was like, hey, this is a really good start. This is really solid. So, I'm happy to hear that you've been consistent with that, because it has it checks quite a few boxes really well. So, and like you said, you know, one of the things that the biggest thing that we preach, is that the most important training variable is consistency. And so, if you can do something consistently and it has the right pieces of the recipe, that's going to be the most important thing. You know, it's not going and doing crazy stuff. It's not trying to murder yourself with training. It's consistency over a long time, and consistency over 3 years is obviously paid off for you. And so, I'm happy to hear that, especially that's something that you listed in your outline of like, you know, this is something that I know I can do. And you're able to check the boxes every week. And that's huge. That is the biggest thing for long-term progress.
Yeah. It sounds so silly. I mean, you read any book about habits or like really any life area, you know, this whole 1% better compounding results. I just wish maybe not everybody is this way, but I wish it wasn't so hard to kind of like trick yourself into doing the simple things consistently versus trying to, again, like, do like an 8-hour workout or something. And, you know, you try to cram for a test. It's a tale as old as time, but
for
we humans struggle with it.
Well, I mean, I think there's a couple things that are nested inside that. And one of the things is people try to start too big, you know, and for example, for a long time at my gym, you know, when my business partner would do consultations, we would have people come in and they're like, well, I'm going to do 5 days a week and I'm going to do this and this is what I'm going to do. And we're like, you know, we start off people with 2 to 3 days per week. And then we build momentum and we build consistency. And so it's really, first of all, taking stock of what's realistic for your life and what's actually going to fit rather than setting some very far reaching goal that, you know, is maybe you don't know, but you don't realize isn't necessarily going to nest within your life. And it starts with that. And then the second thing is like, I assume from what you were telling me, do you work out at home?
Yes, I do.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. And that's one of the biggest things for success that I've seen with a lot of our folks. Now, some people need to go to the social environment and other things like that, but the folks that have created some kind of home gym for themselves has made a massive improvement in their life because, first of all, environmentally, it's right there, right? You don't have to create a friction point to be able to go work out. And then second of all, it's like you get so much time back, right? Because let's say, you know, a lot of us live rurally and, you know, maybe it's a 20-30 minute drive to the gym. Well, then you go to the gym and you do, let's say, a 30 minute to an hour workout, but then you have 20 to 30 minutes on each side of that. You just lost 2 hours of your day. And so being able to create an environment that makes it easy for you to do things and then get your time back is huge. But there's this, you said about habits. There's this book, BJ Fogg is the guy. And so BJ Fogg is great in that he did all this habit research that a lot of the habit books that you might read are based on. So like James Clear's book,
Atomic Habits,
like they're all based on BJ Fogg's work. The dark side of BJ Fogg's work is that a lot of his students at Stanford were the ones that developed Instagram based on his work. And so we have like these addictive cycles that we get pulled in also because of his work. But
you can
use that for good. Like, so one of the examples is, you know, he talked about, I don't know if it was him or somebody else, but they were having a hard time flossing their teeth and they knew it was something they could do. Well, they set the parameter of like, well, I'm just going to floss one tooth. And then you start flossing one tooth and it's like, okay, well, I'm in there. I'm just going to do it, you know? And so doing those little things of creating small hurdles to jump over, create the momentum that just allow you to keep going. So I think that all nests into the consistency thing. That's all really important.
Yeah. Yep. I'm pretty sure, I don't think I've ever read his book, but I know I've read Atomic Habits. And I think that research has come up in some other things. There's actually I've got a guitar on the wall behind me here. I don't know, love hate relationship with it. I play a little bit. The last couple of years I've probably played more because I've been on this consistency kick. So get my 5 minutes a day and just like pick it up and play it a little bit. And the course, there's an online course that I think is really, really good because it's very simple and it's really built around that whole, I think he even talks about when you're going through his little sales funnel, he talks about the, like that method, like right after, choose the time of day, like right after your first cup of coffee, sit down and play 5 minutes or whatever works for you, right? But it's those simple little things. We're so habitual and so routine oriented that reducing that friction and starting with a tiny, tiny step, like you said, flossing one tooth or playing for 1 minute, and immediately the human brain is, how am I going to get good by flossing one tooth or playing guitar for 1 minute per day? But you do that for a whole year and some days you're going to play more and all that kind of stuff. So we don't need to get into that whole research, but I will say that reducing friction, and my gym is, you can't see it, but it's right here. It steps away from my desk. And that is part of what works for me. I've got a pull-up bar, a half squat rack with a weight bench. And that's pretty much all I use. I've got a barbell set. I have TRX straps, which I actually did some of that when I was working with Jordan. I've got some other stuff. And again, you know this better than anybody. You can go crazy with equipment.
Sure.
You don't need a lot. You could do a heck of a lot with body weight. The other thing I have in here, which we may talk about, is a walking pad, which I got.
Yeah.
Get my steps in when I'm taking my calls and that kind of stuff. But yes, reducing friction and starting with the smallest possible step was a big unlock for me. And that was where it started.
Yeah, that's awesome. I mean, put it the if you want a maxim for it, it's just like put it in your way, right? So
yeah,
put it in your way. Like, let's say, I mean, obviously we're talking about upland hunting on this podcast, but like, you know, I'm good buddies with Bo Martonic, and he's one of my clients, and you know, we were talking about getting better at shooting a bow for archery hunting, and so you know, he has a little range set up in his basement, and he leaves his bow set out in a place that he's going to walk by it, or like leave your bow by your front door if your target's right outside. Like, create all of these instances where like you have these triggers to do the things that you want to do. And it helps a ton, helps a lot.
Yeah. When I don't have the guitar behind me, sometimes I have my bird gun back there so I can pick it up and get my practice mounts in.
There you go, man. There you go. Absolutely. So perfect.
That is that's environmental design, if you will.
It is. It's important.
All right, we've got a little bit ahead of ourselves. I want to back up a little bit because again, we interviewed Jordan on the show and probably talked about a little bit about this, but I want to hear from Todd a bit. Bring me back to again growing up hunting. Mm-hmm. Your interest in hunting and later fitness, how those melded together. Like, walk me through the short history of your journey, how we got here today
with
Predator Pack Mule.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm from central Pennsylvania. That's where I'm sitting right now. And when you grow up in central Pennsylvania, you hunt. That's just kind of what everybody like. Maybe you guys did in Minnesota too, but like, we got the first 2 days of deer season off school and when we were in school. And so, it's just part of the culture. So grew up doing it. But I also was, a big football player. So I love playing football. And so I started training for football when I was probably 12 years old, started lifting weights and doing all that kind of stuff. And so those kind of things coincided through high school. And then got into my career, got into strength and conditioning. And really the way that it happened was I was in college. My undergraduate degree is in psychology, which has helped a ton as a coach, but I was planning to go into education. But I would find myself sitting in the library all the time, reading research on strength conditioning or physiology or all that kind of stuff, or just reading articles. And I just got to the point where I was like, why am I fighting this? You know, this is what I want to do. And this is what I want to put my energy into. And so I took some prereqs so I could go to graduate school. And I got a master's degree in exercise science with a concentration in human performance. And, you know, the goal initially was to go be a big time D1 strength coach somewhere. And I realized that just wasn't the path for me. And so I got into the private sector, started training athletes, mostly training regular adults too. And through that process kind of grew, got some different opportunities, worked with folks to play in the NFL, folk professional baseball players, college athletes of everything that you could imagine. And I actually started when I was about 20 years old, working with two of the female athletic teams at the college that I went to. And that just kind of snowballed and kept going. And my business partner and I started an online business in 2010. We were planning to train people online when we really had no idea how to run a business or how we would train people online. And that kind of it rolled into him opening a gym in Virginia. And the plan was for him to have a gym in Virginia, me have one in Pennsylvania under the same brand. Things didn't work out, ended up going to Connecticut for a couple of years, and then came back down and actually moved to Virginia to run that with him. And then while we were doing that, I also worked with him at a tier one unit as a human performance coach, and did that for eight years. And then while I was doing that, you know, I signed up. Well, I was trying to get my first elk tag, and you know, obviously I'm a career human performance coach. I've pretty solid understanding of what to do, but I'm also humble enough to realize that there's always something that you can learn. And so I went looking around like the hunting world for a strength and conditioning performance type program that I could learn from and incorporate before I went on my first hunt. And I didn't find anything that was worthwhile. And so I was like, well, I'll just do this for myself. And as I did, I started documenting things on Instagram and things like that. And hunters raised their hand and said, you know, hey, are you training anybody? And initially I had no plans to do that because at the time we had the gym. I don't know if you ever heard of Equinox, but it's like this bougie, like high-end gym. They contracted me to, yeah, it's like in most of the major cities, but they contracted me and flew me all over North America to do continuing education workshops for their trainers. We were doing that. And then I had something called Strength Faction, which was a mentorship program for other human performance coaches and trainers and stuff. And then I was with the tier one unit. And so I was like, I don't have time for this. But then, you know, people kept raising their hands and I got back to that kind of same place I was when I decided to be a human performance coach and not go into education. Was like, well, this is what you love to do. You know, why don't you marry these things? And so I started what would become Human Predator Pack Mule in 2019. 2021 gave it an official name, Human Predator Pack Mule. And then this past summer rebranded to Pack Mule Training Company. And so for me, it's just kind of a marriage of the things that I love to do. So I get to go practice photography. I get to write, I get to train people, and I go hunt, and hunting's part of my job now. So
yeah,
it's just kind of how it all came together.
Yeah. How long have you been into photography?
So my first trip to Alaska in 2019, I was there with a guy that was doing a lot. He worked for Meat Eater. And so I had some questions for him, you know, and I was like, well, you know, I've been writing professionally since I was 23 years old. And so I'd write for magazines. I've written for Men's Health, like T Nation back when it used to be a big thing, bodybuilding.com, all of that kind of stuff. And so I wanted to start writing in the outdoor world. And I was like, hey man, you know, what do I need to do to be able to break into this? And he's like, well, you know, the first thing, he's like, you need to get a camera and learn how to take decent pictures, because you got to have a good
photos to go.
You got to have a good photo essay to accompany your writing copy. And so I was like, okay. So I actually bought a camera off him and started in 2019, started practicing. It was just like the old Sony Alpha 600 or 6000, I'm sorry. Yep. And then I was like, you know what? I really love this. And so then I just started upgrading all my equipment and have since made it just like a big part of what I do.
Okay. Yeah. And now you live like right down the road from my buddy, Kevin, who
I know. Yeah. I got, you know, right before we started talking, I was like, I need to text him and see if he's free soon so we can get together. I love his work. What he does with tones is just incredible. He's really good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, yeah, you guys will have plenty to get into, I'm sure.
I hope so.
Okay. So on the hunting side, like, so you grew up hunting, deer hunting, mm-hmm. right? But like, where, are you? Primarily big game. We do some upland hunting. I mean, we talked a little bit about bird dogs and I know you have some interest there. So talk to me about Todd the hunter.
Man, I would tell you, if you called me tomorrow and you were like, Todd, there's the New Mexico mountain vole runt is on. Let's go hunt. I'd be like, yeah, let's go. I mean, you know, so I like to hunt everything. I mean, my favorite thing to hunt are turkeys. I love hunting turkeys.
Oh, heck yeah.
Run and gun, no decoys, just use the terrain in your mouth and see if you can trick one. You know, that's how I like to hunt them. And so I actually picked that up, like learned how to hunt turkey hunt from my friend Brett and his dad, who are just really, really, really good turkey hunters. And so I love turkey hunting. I love big game hunting. I love upland hunting. And, you know, I really have wanted to do more upland hunting because it just provides you more opportunities to hunt, you know, and then you get to go out. And I think that the biggest thing for me, I don't have my own bird dog yet, but the biggest thing for me is like bird flushes and you get a shot, like that's awesome. But just going out with a dog and watching them work and having the interaction, like that's, I love that. So I love to hunt everything. Obviously, you know, I have upland hunters that I train. I have big game hunters that I train. I mean, I'm going to Nepal in 2028 to go on a blue sheep hunting excursion. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So. Is that a personal trip or are you going with a client?
I'm going with a client. So he's in my top tier program, which is called Pack Mule Apex. And so our buddy Trey runs a hunt booking agency called Neil and Brownlee. And so he went on this hunt and was just talking about it with us for a while. And I was like, man, like we got to do that. And so we booked it. So I'm going along with a camera and moral support. I'm not going to be pulling any triggers or anything like that, but just to go have the experience. I'm just psyched for it, man.
Yeah. Well, I mean, what,
what little I'm getting to know you, like, obviously you enjoy being in the outdoor, natural environments, being, you know, and that's, again, that's part of like why I love upland hunting. It's obviously I do love to chase grouse and flush birds and take shots and use my double guns and that kind of stuff. But I mean, I like the exploration aspect of it, the adventure, the thrill of the hunt. You know, it's the pursuit. It's a pursuit that I think drives many of us, and just being in a, whether it's an old familiar place or exploring a new place. I mean, just, yeah, I'm kind of like you. I mean, obviously I don't know that I would be able to get down for the New Mexico vole hunt tomorrow. Got a lot of things, a lot of irons in the fire, drop everything, but I would think about it.
Yeah, for sure.
Think about it. Absolutely. Yeah,
for sure. Yeah. It's I think that's it. And it's just kind of a, you know, it's kind of a values driven thing, right? Like, you get to put all of the different aspects of your life together, and you get to go learn, and you get to just, like, especially with, I mean, we're talking to each other on the internet right now on our computers. And so we all got a lot of that going on, you know? So
it's just
nice to, even if you're just taking an armed hike with nothing happening, you know, it's just great to be out there, you know? And my absolutely. Thing is preserving that for people as long as I can, you know?
Right.
So you can do it when you're old.
Yeah. I wish you wouldn't have mentioned the turkey thing, because I'm like super tempted to go down a rabbit hole, but we won't. I mean, but the time of year, man, I've gotten into that the last few years. It's a lot of fun. And we've done some turkey talk on the Birdshot podcast, but we have other things to do today. When does your season start though? Like, will you be out mid-April?
Well, so I was in California last year for the past couple of years. I was living out there. So the season actually opened last weekend out there, which is just, it's just fun. Hunting Rios is the best because they just talk all day long. But we don't open until May in Pennsylvania. We have a very late season. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I honestly think they do it right. You know, they're doing a lot to preserve the populations and good for conservation. So yeah, we don't have it till May.
I'm kind of, I'm on the perimeter of sort of the turkey hunting world and culture. And I'm at least somewhat aware of like moving the seasons back and pushing them later. And that's kind of the same here. I mean, we never had turkeys and now we do, but just where I'm located, like, I'm very likely not going to be doing much hunting until May, just because, I mean, you can still see, I got snow behind me there. So yeah, we're supposed to get more this week. I got a trip coming up, going on spring break with the family. And I feel like the last couple of years, every time I got to leave or go somewhere, like, it doesn't snow for weeks. And then there's a blizzard coming when I gotta leave. So hopefully we get out of here. I'm going down to Arizona, where it is like 90 degrees. And I mean, spring break, I guess, but I don't know if I need that much heat, but I'm going to see family. So
that's a lot of spice. That's a big temperature swing, man.
Yes.
That's a big temperature swing.
It is. My outdoor temperature is not working right now. It's pretty mild around Duluth right now. We're definitely out of the depths of winter, but
yeah. But mild for you guys is like way different than mild for us, man.
Typically. Yeah. Yeah. The most people I'm talking to, yeah, my weather is a bit more extreme than anybody else that we're dealing with, but we have listeners further north as well. So I know I don't have it the worst here.
Oh, for sure. For sure.
Okay. So on the, like, as far as just as a whole, your clients, because again, I do think, if you're an upland bird hunter of the in the traditional sense, you know, somewhere on that priority list, like, you got bird dogs, shotguns, you got a whole bunch of other stuff before I feel like fitness even enters the sort of thinking sphere of the upland bird hunter, at least growing up. Like, there was, and I think that has changed certainly in the last decade, like this sort of overlap or the acknowledgement of, if you are any kind of a hunter, you know, pursuing outdoor adventure, like the overlap there in fitness and wanting to be in good shape. Sometimes fitness, you start talking about fitness and gyms, and people have sort of envisions of like magazine shoots and all kinds of crazy stuff. But obviously it's not about that. It's about longevity and enjoying your days of field and what fitness looks like for the wilderness athlete, if you will, is obviously not the same for a bodybuilder. That sort of thing. We'll get into that a little bit, but how big of a slice of pie do your clients, upland hunters, make up right now, like compared to somebody who's going out west elk hunting, that kind of stuff?
Oh, I mean, compared to everybody else, it's a small slice of the pie, you know? But the cool thing is, like you just mentioned, people are starting to realize the importance of it, you know? Yeah. And, you know, I think the thing is like, you know, you see, you think you only need it for maybe going to do something more extreme, right? So like I mentioned on the phone, I have several clients that drive from the east and they go out west for 6 weeks at a time to go hunt all the different upland species. You know, inevitably they end up in Nevada or Oregon or something like that hunting chuckers, and like chuckers don't live in nice places. So you have to do some walking. And so it's a real big aspect of that. But when you think about somebody, you know, in your situation, or maybe a lot of your listeners, you know, you're hunting grouse, or maybe you go to the Dakotas or something to hunt pheasants, it's the fitness aspect of it becomes less about being able to go and manage gnarly terrain and more about being able to, like you said, enjoy your days of field. Because I don't think people realize how much improving your fitness, even by a little bit, makes it a lot nicer.
Yeah.
And then from the other standpoint, like we talked about earlier, is just like, you're just paying dividends so you can do this way later in life. That's the biggest thing, especially for upland hunters. Cause listen, I know how much you guys have to do, right? Like you got to train your dogs. You gotta do all of your shotgun practice, all of that kind of stuff. And so I realize time is short, especially if you have a family, you have businesses, you have things to do. But you just, I think the biggest thing is reframing it for people of like, I'm not training to go do these gnarly performances or anything like that. I'm training so that mid 30s, 40s me put some investments in the bank for a 60 to 80 year old me. So
yeah,
I can go do this for the rest of my life. And I think that's the proper way to frame it, especially for an upland hunter.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Okay. So when you think about the average upland hunter, like what do you see in the field that tells you somebody is or isn't physically ready or where they need to be?
Well, I mean, you're going to look at simple things like, you know, let's say it's a hot day and you got to carry extra water for your dogs. Like how well does your posture manage the extra weight in your vest? You know, and if you have to break down and like pause, or you're constantly shifting your posture, you're probably not strong and don't necessarily have the muscular endurance to do that as well as you could have. So that's one thing that you want to look at. And then let's say, you know, you have a long day. Does your endurance, does your fatigue start to catch up with you before you really are getting into the later pushes of the day? And then the next thing you might want to look at is how do you go back to back? So let's say, you know, you got a few days off work and you're going to hunt a lot throughout those days. When you wake up on day two or day three, are you beat to crap, or do you still feel like you can go as well as you did on day one? And apart from that, like, do you have any weird joint stuff? Do you have a hard time moving on different terrain? Do you get sore from all of that? And so if you're going to look at things, those are going to be the biggest things that tell you whether or not you're where you want to be or could be when it comes to upland hunting.
Okay. So one thing that I recall doing specifically with Jordan 3 years ago was you guys do a lot of upfront assessment. Like if somebody's actually in your program, obviously you want to establish a baseline, see where somebody's at, meet them where they're at, and then build them up, right? Pretty simple stuff there. So how does somebody listening to this go about assessing themselves to see where they're at? Obviously you guys have a structured way of doing it, but what things are you ultimately trying to learn about somebody to see what their baseline level of fitness is?
Yeah. So, I mean, I'll go at that from two angles. So from us, I want to see how well you move. So we're going to assess your movement capacity or mobility, whatever you want to call it. Cause that tells me a couple things, like is your body as resilient as it needs to be? And then on top of that, are you wasting energy anywhere? So let's just say, for example, that you have poor ankle mobility. Well, anytime you get on any kind of a grade or have to step over something or up onto something, you're going to waste energy doing that. And that's going to cause fatigue more than it should. You're going to use your gait in a weird way. You're going to swing your legs weird or something like that. It just also tells me, you know, if your joints aren't moving as well as they could, they're not going to be as stable as they could either. So you're going to do funky things to stabilize your body to make sure you're moving well. When people get into our programs like Backcountry Ready, where we do an assessment, more assessments, we want to look at your aerobic fitness. We look at it in a couple of different ways. We look at your overall strength, and we look at your muscular endurance. Those are the things that we want to know, especially for somebody that's going to be walking up and down hills a lot. Now, if an upland hunter wanted to do this for themselves, I would tell them to hop on YouTube, look up some kind of ankle mobility assessment and do that. Look up some kind of hip mobility and do assessment and do that, and shoulder mobility assessment and do that. And then you can use one of our tests that would be really simple to do by yourself, which is our 3-mile rucking assessment. And so what you would do is put 20% of your body weight in your pack. You'd need a heart rate monitor to do this, but you can get a heart rate monitor for $80. And you're going to warm up for 15 minutes without your weight. So you'll just walk, you know, get your body warmed up so your aerobic system's ready to go. Put on your pack or your vest or whatever you have. You can put some weight in, and you want it to be about 20% of your body weight. You want it to be 20% of your body weight. And then you're going to plot a 3-mile course that's relatively flat, and you're going to walk it. And what we're looking for is, can you sustain your output? So can you walk for 3 miles and do that in 45 minutes while keeping your heart rate average in zone 2? So if you can do that, you're in pretty decent aerobic shape, and you're in decent, you have decent load carrying efficiency, decent efficiency under load. And so if a upland hunter was only going to do a couple things, those would be the things I would have them do.
Yeah. I remember doing that assessment at one time, and rucking is definitely something that I wanted to get into today, because that is one of those tiny habits that has stuck with me for 3 years now. And I mean, I was telling you last week, and I probably talked about it on the show before, but I've got 2 bird dogs. They need daily exercise, right? So if I've got a normal day, we're going to get out and go for some kind of a hike. Like, doesn't matter what time of year it is, we're going for a hike. Not long. It's not like, you know, it's a lunch break hike typically, in 30 to 40 minutes max, maybe. Sometimes it's 25, whatever. But that was one of those moments where I was like, I do this every single day. All I got to do is have a backpack with a little bit of weight in it here and just put this on. And it's like, I'm getting this added benefit, something I'm already doing. I already had the habit. I already had the ritual in my day. All I had to do was layer on that little bit of extra work and start small. I mean, start with 5 pounds, you know, again, yeah. Floss one tooth, put 5 pounds in a backpack. You won't even notice it. And that's the point. You want to just build it up. I have not done that 3-mile test for a while. And my daily ruck weight, I was just checking the calculator, it's over the 20%. So I should do that 3-mile assessment.
Yeah. Summer. It'd be good to know. It would be good to know. Yeah. And that's the thing with rucking is like, you do want to start, especially if you've never done it. I mean, obviously you guys, you know, if you have a decent amount of weight in your vest, like you got water, you got your shells, you got maybe a handful of birds in there, like you'll carry a decent amount of weight. But like, from a consistency and building efficiency standpoint, you want to start relatively light. So I typically have people start somewhere between 10 and 15% of their body weight. Especially like more towards the 10 side of things, if you're on the north side of 200 pounds, and you've never done it before. But then what we really know from like the military research and some of the mountaineering research is being around 20% of body weight is where you're going to build the most efficiency. Cause it doesn't change your gait. It's good with posture. It's good with breathing, all of that kind of stuff. And then once you get really on the north side of 30%, you can start to see diminishing returns. And so that's not, especially if you're going to go for a longer walk, like a shorter walk, it might not make that big of a difference. But, you know, you see some of these extreme things with guys going out and walking all the time with 40 or 50% of your body weight. And it's a bad idea. It's not actually improving your fitness. It's likely just creating bad habits and breaking your body down more than you need to. So like even with the mountain hunters and stuff that I train right now, like we've been doing 15% of our body weight on a grade that we can manage, and we'll progress up to mostly around 20% of our body weight for all the work. And these are folks doing backpack hunts that are going to be 50, 60 pounds going in, you know? And so the biggest thing to remember is like you're building efficiency, and your body will adapt beyond what you're giving it to make you strong underneath your pack and get your conditioning where it needs to be.
Yeah. Have you read the Michael Easter books?
Yeah, I know Michael. Yeah, Comfort Crisis. Oh, you do? Yeah. So okay, Mike was actually the second guest on my podcast ever.
Oh,
so,
really?
Yeah. Yeah.
No way. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. So was Comfort Crisis his first book where he went to Alaska with Donnie Vincent?
Yep. That was his first book. Yeah.
All right. I listened to that book last year. It was like one of these, it like kept popping up. And I started listening to that randomly. And I think actually I heard him on a podcast. I might've heard him on like Joe Rogan podcast, like a big podcast. He's just pretty well-known author. And he's talking about how he's got a German short hair and like he goes for hikes. And so then I listened to that book, and that book was like, again, I was already well underway and sort of doing this stuff, but it tied in rucking and just like so many things. And habits and rituals and routines, and just really, really enjoyed that book. But I forgot how much he got into. You probably know the guy that started Go Ruck.
He
the science behind it and all of the research. And and that was like kind of the point that I wanted to make here. Like, basically, upland hunting is rucking. Like, you put a vest on that has weight in it, and you go for a hike. Upland hunting is rucking. So like one of the best things that you can do in the off season is just to keep on rucking.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. It's huge for you guys. Huge for you guys. Especially if like you adapt to it with, 20% of your body weight. Like I'd imagine, most of the time when you go out with your vest, at least at start, you're not carrying that much weight, right? So if you can go ruck for 3 miles and get efficient under 20% of your body weight, then you're going to handle your vest pretty well,
Yep. And that's one of the things that I know I mentioned this to you last week, but kind of when you do something like this, you start to look for, okay, is this paying off? Is this really paying dividends? And I was telling you how I used to go out and for my first grouse hunts of the season, you put your vest on and like my shoulders would kind of be sore at the end of the day, because it's like, oh, I haven't worn my vest since last December or whenever it was. And since I've been rucking, there's not that's like a huge inconvenience or anything. It's just something you just sort of tolerate, but it's very noticeable because I ruck year round that when I just start upland hunting in September, I mean, that feels like a breeze strapping on my upland vest because I've been carrying a lot more weight than that the whole year round.
Yeah, for sure. Which is nice, right? Like you just, that adds the enjoyment factor, but like also think about, let's just throw a scenario out. Let's say it's the end of the day, one of your first days of the season, and you are at that point where you're fatigued and maybe you have to make a shot that maybe it's a spicy shot. Maybe it's a tough one. And if you still have gas in the tank, you have still have capacity, like your decision-making, your shots, your focus, like they're all going to be better because you're not worried about your shoulders. You're not worried about how tired you are. And so it improves your hunting as well. I mean, obviously you got to do all the other stuff to make sure that you're still shooting well, but like,
correct.
It'll improve your experience and you improve your ability to be successful.
Yeah. Yeah. No doubt. So sticking with the rucking thing for a minute here, this is something I've been curious about. Like when I ruck, I try to walk about like as fast as I reasonably can. And I'm not running. Obviously you got weight on your pack and my heart rate elevates, but I don't really get into zone two when I ruck.
You won't.
And that was going to be my question is like, not that I want to be there, but I was just kind of curious, like if you get there or if you're just, I'm pretty much in that zone one most of the time when I'm rucking.
Sure. And that's what's going to happen. So once you get efficient and you're good at it, it's going to be really, really hard to get your heart rate up into zone two without using some kind of grade. And so that's like, if I see somebody smokes the 45 minute ruck test, we're going to a grade, because, or we'll not leave your pack on. I'm going to say something to be very clear before I move on to the next thing to say, don't ever run with your ruck on. It is a really bad idea. Don't do it. You're going to end up with stress fractures. You're going to end up with problems in your back, your hips. It's just, it does not improve your fitness. Those two things are different skills. And your body doesn't even use the same gait to accomplish them. So don't ever run with your ruck on. That said, if you start doing some low intensity running away from your rucking, it can improve your rucking because it improves your aerobic system, your ability to handle force and all that kind of stuff. So if you start to get a fish under your pack, you're not going to get into zone two. So you'll have to get on a grade, or you'll have to do something else to elevate your heart rate to that degree.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Would now be a good point to layer in like zone two cardio?
Yeah, sure.
That sort of thing. Because I think if somebody were thinking about, hey, I'm going to get in shape for upland hunting, they're probably going to think about jogging or cycling or doing something more of your traditional cardio. Yeah. But talk about zone two, what it is, and why that matters.
Yeah, so there are five zones, right? And people break them
heart rate zones. Yeah,
yeah, there are five different, and you can call them intensity zones, because
the
most accurate way to denote what training zone you're in and what intensity you're actually training in is to measure your blood lactate while you're training. Now, unless you're insane or you want to spend $1 billion a year measuring your blood lactate every time you train, like it's not practical. It's not worth it. So the heart rate zones are a good approximation. And so your first two zones are zone one, zone two, and these are primarily aerobic energy, right? You're primarily producing energy aerobically. Now, not entirely, primarily. And one thing to understand, people need to understand about energy systems, is that all of your energy systems are active all the time, right? So it's not like if you go out and do zone one training, you're only using aerobic energy. You're using aerobic and anaerobic. So they break down into aerobic means with oxygen, anaerobic means without oxygen. Your aerobic system is the most efficient and can sustain energy production for the longest. And so that's why we're so focused on developing the aerobic system. Not only that, it's also your recovery system. So when your aerobic system is well developed, you'll recover better between our hard efforts. So let's say you are on a hunt where you have a long uphill walk. When you get to the top of that hill, if your aerobic system is where it needs to be, then you're going to recover better and be able to go for your next hard uphill. Or, you know, if you're hunting multiple days in a row, if your aerobic system is where it needs to be, you'll recover better between hunts and have more gas in the tank when you get up for the next day. So zone one and zone two are primarily aerobic. Zone two is the top of your aerobic system where you are still primarily using fat for fuel, but is right at the edge of that. And so that's where a lot of people want to train, especially initially, because it's going to make you more efficient. And then as people get in better shape, like really, really, really good shape, then they have to shift their tempo back to zone one more often. And then in zone three, you start to see an even split. So you're like 50% anaerobic, 50% aerobic. Mm. Get above that, you're primarily anaerobic. So if you get into zone four, which is above what's called your lactate threshold, then you're primarily using carbs for fuel and you're using bigger muscles, bigger, like fast twitch muscles. So you fatigue much, much, much faster. So the main goal with anybody that wants to condition to do something like hunting, no matter what hunting it is to push the top of your zone two as high as you possibly can first, because it just gives you way more endurance and way more ability to recover. And once somebody's there, then we look at pushing the top of their zone three higher, because then it gives you an overall greater energy contribution from your aerobic system. And so when you train in zone two, what happens is, like from an adaptation standpoint, your heart gets better out at pumping out the amount of blood per minute. You get more things called more capillary density, which is the smallest blood vessels in your body. So they're transferring oxygen, nutrients, and waste from your muscles. You get better fat stores in your muscles. So essentially what you do is you create just way, way, way more efficiency for your body to generate and utilize energy and oxygen. And so that's like probably the 10,000 foot view of zone two. We could get really, really, really nerdy about it, but I don't think that that's necessary. But that's essentially what we're trying to do with zone one and zone two training.
It's kind of trendy right now, isn't it? I mean, zone two comes up quite a bit.
It is. And then so people try to naysay it as well and just say like, oh, really? It doesn't matter. Your heart. Yeah, they do. And it's just like, but it's just people being contrarians. But it's like, I've trained a lot of people for a lot of years across a lot of different situations. And when people start out slow and they train in zone one and zone two, not only do they have better short-term results, but their long-term results are just way, way better. So like Scott Johnston is probably the best endurance coach in the world. So His two of his ultra runners won the Western States 100 last year. He works with Olympic athletes. He does everything. And it's like, that's one of his big principles that I've mildly adopted is that he doesn't even start trying to add in a bunch of high intensity conditioning until there's only a 10% difference between someone's aerobic threshold, which is the top of your zone two, and anaerobic threshold, which is the top of your zone three. And so there's just so much ground to be made up just by doing lower intensity to moderate intensity conditioning before you even worry about doing really hard stuff, which is, you know, one of the things that I fight back against in the hunting industry all the time is like people just say you got to murder yourself and you're actually just doing yourself a very, very, very big disservice. So,
yeah.
But then, I mean, as far as methods go, the way that you want to think about it is like, yes, do your rucking all the time because it's specific to what you're doing. But then, you know, you're going to get to that point like you've talked about. It's like your heart rate's not going to get into zone two. And so different ways to do that would be, you know, you could get on a bike and do general training there. You could get on an incline with your ruck. You could run, all of those kind of things. But the biggest thing with running is that you got to go slow. You're probably going to start with run walk intervals. You're going to do stuff like that just to keep your heart rate and intensity in the right place. But and then, yeah,
when you say you got to go slow, is that to prevent your heart rate from getting too high? Like you got to go slow to keep it low.
Absolutely. Yeah. And especially with running. And then another thing with running is building up something called tissue tolerance. And so people are like, oh, I can't run. Every time I run, I get hurt. And it's just because they started running before their legs and feet were ready for it. And so that's why they end up injured. And so, you know, with people in Pack Mule and with people at our gym and everything, we start off with run walk intervals and just start to build up volume. And then that's the next thing to consider is that volume is always going to be the best course of action. And by volume, I mean amount. So you could look at it from a time standpoint or a mile standpoint. Doing as much aerobic volume as you have time for and you can handle is going to be the best course of action. It's going to give you way better results than just trying to put in a bunch of higher intensity conditioning or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah. And that was very well laid out. Just to kind of highlight a few things, like at least the way I look at it is the whole zone two thing is that's like it's good news in that like the 80-20 rule, like most people, you have so much you can accomplish by doing zone two, which is not intimidating. It's not super intense. Like if you don't have a workout program or a fitness routine, zone two is a pretty easy thing to start doing. And as you laid out, Todd, like most people have so much ground to gain right there. You don't even need to worry about, again, the tough mudder or whatever you got coming up this summer.
and for the thing is like for years and years and years and years, like you can continue to improve your aerobic system by doing that for a long time. And that's one of the things when you look at your training is what are going to give me the best long-term results and adaptations. So like the two best things that you're going to get are strength and aerobic development, because, you know, the faster, the more intense conditioning there, what you get from them is called a metabolic adaptation. And those don't last very long, but if you build the structure of your aerobic system, it'll last forever and you can continue to build it. Whereas like you max out higher intensity adaptations really, really quick. And so when you think about like the economy of what you're doing, it's like, well, what's going to pay the biggest dividends? And if you have to narrow it down to I'm going to say three things, it's going to be work on your mobility, work on your strength, and work on your aerobic system.
I wanted to say like the, you know, running, I like running. I actually enjoy it. I enjoy trail running and doing that sort of thing. But like you said, if you like don't run for 6 months and then you go out and try to run, like you're going to be so sore the next day. Like you're going to be winded. I mean, you're going to feel all that. And I feel like that's one of those things where somebody might do that once and then just say, screw this, you know,
absolutely.
Like I hate this. And so if that's you, if you hate running, just ruck, because ruck is such an easy thing. It's so much more approachable, I feel like, than running. And again, if you start with a really low weight, just build it up, you know, add 5 pounds a week or whatever. I had forgotten about the sort of like the maxing out of your gains at 30% of your body weight. Cause one of my questions to you was going to be, I think I'm at 50 pounds in my pack. I'm second guessing myself now. It's somewhere between 40 and 50 pounds. And I stopped adding weight mainly just because I'm using my first ever Cabela's deer hunting backpack that I had. And like, I just got that thing loaded up and I don't really want it to fall apart on me. So I haven't done that, but you're kind of reminding me now, like I don't necessarily need to add any more weight. I just kind of do that every day. But I am curious about the incline and rucking on a grade. Maybe that's sort of like a next step for me.
Yeah. So there's a couple things that you could do. I mean, for your short rucks, like we know, so the kind of crossover lines are 30% of body weight, but never really consistently ruck above 50 pounds. And so that's what we know. So you're fine with your short rucks for 50% with 50 pounds, you should be fine. But if you're going to start going longer, you would cut that back. And if you're going to get on a grade, you would cut that back. And so you would go back towards like the 20% of your body weight type place and live there. So that would be the progression. And so for us, it's always, there's nothing wrong with adding weight over time. I'm not going to say that, but if you want to get the most benefit, add volume first. So like, let's say you start off with 20 pounds. Okay. Before you think about, okay, I'm going to jump up to 30 pounds, either do longer sessions with that 20 pounds or do more sessions with that 20 pounds. So you continue to get efficient and build more fitness. And then as that starts to get really easy, then either add a grade or add more weight. And so you can progress the intensity in two ways, either by adding a grade or adding weight. And so that would be kind of how you lock yourself up with fitness with rucking.
Yeah. Okay. That makes sense. And again, my little habit is I'm sort of constrained by time and daily schedule. So it's sort of, that's where I've landed on. But if you were, this is something I wanted to tie back to. You talked about like moving the ceiling up on your zone too.
Mm-hmm.
How do we do that specifically? Like you need to just spend more time in zone two to move the ceiling up. How do you increase that level?
Mostly volume. And so the not to be Johnny Raincloud here, but the most important thing for you at this point, which is one of the things that I wrote down in my notes, would be to do longer sessions.
Yeah.
At some point you just have to start doing longer sessions. So it makes your aerobic system more stable over time. And so, you would start to avoid what's called heart rate drift. And so, you know, as you get going, as your body temperature gets going, as you start to fatigue, your heart rate starts to drift, and then you get up into higher heart rate zones and you start burning more carbs for fuel. And so when you can do longer sessions in zone two, it's easier for you to maintain aerobic output, but also it starts to push that threshold up higher. And so it's going to be a volume thing. And then eventually to really, if you really want to start to push it forward, you got to start doing longer sessions. So I know you're around the 40 minute mark at sometimes and sometimes shorter now. So if you could get to the point where you could do a 60 minute session once per week, you'd start to see even more benefit.
Yeah. Yeah. That's logical to me that like I could definitely work that in and have at times. I've done like when I'm at home, if I have a window of time, Saturday, Sunday, whatever, I'll go for a longer ruck. And in the fall, I'm getting that right. I got my bird vest on and I'm getting two, three hour rucks in. So that's good. But this time of year, like you said, once a week, I can sort of build that in and stick to it. And I would like to work that in just to sort of see what sort of, cause I haven't done that the last 3 years. I'm very happy with where I'm at, but I am sort of looking like, okay, what's that next little thing that I layer on that doesn't sink the whole ship, but just kind of builds, you know, how do we build on this?
That would be it. And, you know, it is important to note that like you're hunting during the season, you know, it counts as conditioning. I mean, it's a specific thing that you're training to do. It's just, you start to make that even more impactful if you improve your conditioning throughout the rest of the year. So like one of the things that we'll do as we move more into hunting season is we'll make the rest of our conditioning, if folks have time for it, far more general. So instead of saying, hey, you're going to go ruck on a grade or do whatever it might be, you know, go get on the bike, go get on the rower, go do something more general just to, so you're not overstressing things, but also so like, you know, you're having different aspects of your training getting built out as well.
So I know I want to talk about strength. We're going to get there, mm-hmm. but I mentioned that I have this walking pad Mm-hmm. It's a treadmill for walking, if anybody's scratching their head. Not really for running. It's a smaller, it's shorter. And I got it in my office. I don't remember exactly the reason why I got it. I think I was just thinking because I work out here and I spend a lot of time on the phone. So I thought, why not? You know, you'll see some people have like walking treadmills under their desk or whatever. So I threw one in here and I started doing that. And when I mentioned that to you last week, you said it was something you recommended.
Yeah.
Now I have the habit, like I use it a lot. I get a lot of walking in on that thing. If I'm on the phone, it's just like, it's steps away. I go over there, hop on and spin it up and I go on there. But I was wondering, like, is there any benefit to like, should I be thinking about getting a treadmill that has some incline, like having a weighted vest hanging over there that I could slip on and just get a little bit extra there? I mean, how do you think about those things? Obviously, I'm getting plenty of just basic steps in. You get some mechanical assistance with the walking pad. So I don't look at it as exercise, but it's just movement and motion, really.
Yeah. I mean, increasing your daily activity level is one of the best things that you can do for your longevity. So if someone can have one of those and like keep access to it, it's huge for longevity, but it's also huge, you know, for body composition. Like, I work with some CEOs and stuff that have obnoxiously busy schedules. And so that's one of the triggers that I put for them is like, every time you get on that phone, you just get on your walking pad and increase your activity level. And so if you'd like to lose weight, if you'd like to do things like that, it's really useful for that. Really, really useful. Now the incline treadmill. Yeah. I think it's a great tool. Especially, you know, I have quite a few folks that live in the Midwest, in like the middle of the Midwest, where it's like you're not going to see a hill for days, you know?
Yeah.
And so if they're going to go to the mountains, they have no choice but to get on an incline treadmill or a stair climber or something like that. So it's a very useful tool for people that want to improve their conditioning and don't have access to hills and stuff like that. And just coming back to all the other things that we talked about before, just the convenience factor of having it in your environment. You know, you don't have to jump in your truck and drive 45 minutes to get to a hill. Like, you go out to the garage and you get on the incline treadmill for 45 minutes and you've done your work, you know? So I think they're a great tool. I would recommend, you know, one of the things that Jordan and I used to talk about and preach to our members in PacMule all the time is like, one piece of cardio equipment will change your life. You know, just having something in your house that allows you to do that, you know, and a treadmill that inclines is really good. And one that goes up to about 15% is good for a lot of people. For folks that are going to go hunt mountains, we have one at my gym. It's like the Nordic Track X16 or something like that.
It goes to 40%.
It goes to 40. And so I've looked at it. Dude, they're wild. I like those way better than a stair climber because you get more ankle work out of it. So a stair climber, your ankles don't have to dorsiflex that much. But if you're walking on a 30% grade on the treadmill, your ankles have to do some work. And so if somebody's going to put something in their house that they want something that goes to a steeper grade, that's what I recommend.
Yeah. I'm interested. I think I was listening to a Rich Roll podcast.
Okay.
Like a year ago, and he had a Nordic Track. He was talking about that 40%. And I was like, oh man, that would be, cause I got the rucking habit established and now I've got this walking pad habit established. So I could see myself maybe upgrading to a serious treadmill. But yeah, I was curious to get I'm gonna have to see if Nordic Track maybe we get a sponsorship on the podcast.
That'd be awesome. Yeah, I mean, they're not cheap. They're like $2,400 to $2,700 or something like that. But like, it's, and I'll tell you, when you get that grade up above 20%, it gets spicy in a hurry, you know. So but it's,
what would you just hype, like what would you do on it? Like would you put 20 pounds on and walk at 40% for a half hour? Do you do like a varied thing or how would you do it?
It would depend on what the goal is. For some folks, it would be like, I'm training several folks to go to the Northwest Territories to hunt doll sheep this year. And the Mackenzie Mountains they're spicy. They're not super high, but the grades are gnarly. So at some points, you know, we'll do unweighted stuff at steep inclines. We'll do it with light weight. We'll progress up. But what I want to see is like how well do they manage pace and how well do they manage their heart rate at a certain grade with a certain amount of weight before we start to progress up. But it would be a combination of all of those things, you know. I mean, you could just get on that thing with no weight and for a lot of people put it at 10% and you're like, you're going to notice something, you know. So
yeah,
it's kind of a combination of all of that depending on what you want to accomplish.
Okay. One more thing before we leave that. Do you do any of the knees over toes, like the backwards walking on the treadmills or anything like that? Are you familiar with that at all?
Yeah. I mean, I don't program
it. We don't need to go on a whole side tangent of somebody else's training.
No. I don't program it a lot, but here's the thing is doing some kind of what would be called eccentric work for your quads is good, especially if you're going to be on terrain, because if you think about coming down, like that's the place that your quads really start to burn up, blow up. So I think it's, I've never done it that way, but I think that it would be a good thing for sure.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. I don't want to, we've been chatting for a while here talking rucking and zone two,
but
where do, let's hit on strength and strength and then joints, kind of joints and mobility. And sort of tie those things in here as far as what an upland hunter should be concerned with and focusing on.
Yeah. So, I mean, general strength is huge for a couple of reasons. One, it's going to promote your longevity. It makes your body more resilient. And just the two things that go first as you start to age, and it happens faster than people realize, is your strength and your power. And that's because your nervous system starts to decline before your musculoskeletal system does. And so we want to do things that train our nervous system to continue its output, to continue and maintain our central nervous system and our peripheral nervous system. And so strength is huge for longevity in that respect. Then from an energy standpoint and a resilience standpoint, the stronger you are relative to your body weight, the less everything costs you. Right. So you just have to use less energy and you have to recruit less muscle to do a task. So say, for example, you're going to do a step up. If you're relatively stronger, each step up you take isn't going to require you as much energy. So it's going to delay your time to fatigue. And so, you know, doing basic movements like you had, you were doing a lot of Zercher squats, like Zercher squats are great. So I like squats on the front of the body because most people don't have the mobility and the range of motion to do a back squat well. And so like you're just loading your spine and then doing funky stuff. So front squats, Zercher squats, lunges in all directions, step ups, RDLs, anything that's going to train the back of your body.
Romanian deadlifts.
Romanian deadlifts. Yeah. And then and definitely making sure that people incorporate single leg work because we spend most of our time on one leg, you know, whether we're just walking around our house or whether we're out hunting. And so the stability and the strength that you gain from that is really important. So it's just strength's important from a human standpoint, especially because, you know, if we were all still agrarian folks out working the fields every day, it probably wouldn't be that big of a deal, but we're not. So we have to do things to keep ourselves strong. So it's a huge, huge, huge thing for everybody. And then joints, mobility stuff.
Yeah.
You want to do it every day. And so I'll send you a link to something that I put together on YouTube. So doing it before your workouts, if you take 5 minutes and do some mobility work as part of your warm up, very big. But then, you know, every day. So we talk about tiny habits and attaching things to things we're already doing. Every morning when I get my coffee brewing, I do a little mobility routine that literally takes a minute and 23 seconds. And hits all the major joints that you need to move. And so the things that you want to focus on, and I'll send you a link to it so you can share it if you want. And then
definitely
is your ankles, your hips, your spine, and your shoulders. And so doing something with them every day is going to help maintain like your integrity, your posture, how well you move. You'll save energy, you'll feel better. Like all of those things are really big. So when we, depending on the training phase, we always do it during our warm-ups, whether we're going to condition or whether we're going to lift. But then during a lot of our strength work, we do mobility work in between our strength sets to facilitate how well we're moving during the strength work, but also just to continue to drive that home that we're going to be working on moving well all the time.
Okay. Yeah, I definitely would be interested in the mobility thing, because that's, I don't really have a good habit around that. Like I just
I wrote down those were my questions for you. Was like, how much are you doing mobility work? So
good. Yeah. Well, yeah, we'll talk about that in a minute, because I do, like, I think about, like, if I'm, you know, if I'm sitting down in front of the TV or something, like I could do something while I'm doing nothing, you know, those kinds of things. But in the morning to get moving, one thing I do is every day is immediately when I wake up, I'm coming to let the dogs out basically. So I wake up, I come right out here, I let the dogs out, and I get on that walking pad. And that's been a little habit change that I've done in the last year. And I mean, again, I just really enjoy, I like get up and get moving right away. And I'm at least somewhat familiar with like the lymphatic system and just like what motion does to your body. And I feel like I get a better start to my day than I did prior to doing that.
Oh, without a doubt. Any kind of movement first thing in the morning is going to be big. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So we'll definitely get the little movement there. Okay. So from a strength, and again, you're going to put something together, which is kind of like the Upland Hunters one pager. For if you do nothing else between now and September, see if you can incorporate some of these things, right? So from a strength perspective, is there three body weight exercises that you would say do this or do that, or what's at the core of the minimum effective dose from a strength perspective?
I mean, if you're only going to do body weight, which is fine to start, but I mean, you can get kettlebells off Amazon for not that much money. And so,
or check Facebook Marketplace.
Yeah. You can get, I mean, even if you have two kettlebells that are the same weight, like you could do a lot. But if you were just going to do something super minimal like that, it would be lunges, single leg RDLs, push-ups and rows. And maybe as you get stronger, doing some presses with the kettlebells. Like if you did that kind of stuff, you'd be in a pretty good baseline to start. Yeah.
Okay. I love kettlebells. I have and I think I remember talking to George, I don't have a double set of any of them. I have them in a, you know, sequential kettlebells because I was, for a long time I was doing, or for a while, I really like Pavel Tsatsulin, Russian kettlebell. Like I just love, like when he does a podcast or very much simple, minimalistic approach to fitness and strength. And that's kind of, again, sort of what I do now is kind of built around that. But I was doing Turkish get-ups and kettlebell swings. I don't do the swings much anymore because I was worried about compression on my spine. And that's why I also switched to Zercher squats. Zerchers, as opposed to back squats. And that was a Pavel Tsatsulin recommend. I had no idea what a Zercher squat was. And for listeners, they won't know it, but basically you hold the barbell in on your elbows on the inside of your biceps and forearms. And it seems like how would you do that? But, and it's, I put a little foam pad around my barbell. So like the first time I did it, cause you'll be sore the first time, but very quickly that goes away. And that's what I do now, but I do love the kettlebells. Those are great.
Oh yeah. And I mean, even if you just want to use them like a dumbbell, right? Like they work just fine for weight. I mean, and with the kettlebell swing stuff, like honestly, I don't incorporate them in any of our programs because there's something that you have to be taught in person by somebody who knows what they're doing. And so you need to learn how to do them. And a lot of times you need to really learn how to hip hinge and deadlift really well first before you worry about that. So, but I mean, once people can do them, they're a great exercise, but there's something you need to learn in person.
Yeah. I've done them a lot and I've worked on them and I feel like I understand the significance of form and stuff, but it's just one of those things where if you're tired or fatigued, like I just don't fully trust myself that I'm doing them exactly the right way, you know?
For sure. And if I have somebody do them, it's always at the beginning of a workout as part of their power training, you know, and not really under a fatigue thing, especially until they get really good, until their skills dial in, you know?
Yeah. Okay. Man, we covered a ton of stuff here. I guess so my little program, I will share that with listeners and ask you like, just sort of what do you see from your perspective, any tweaks or changes I should be, obviously I've been doing this pretty much for the last 3 years
And it was developed around just stuff that I learned and experimented with and talking to Jordan 3 years ago. But it was, again, the unlock for me was the frictionless ability to start it. So I wanted to come up with something simple that basically hit all areas of the body. So I was looking for compound movements. And I chose the pull-up, which is now a weighted pull-up. I do Zercher squats, and then I do incline bench press. So I'm kind of getting full body, and I do them in a circuit where I do 3 reps of each of those exercise, and then I rest for like 7 to 10 minutes. And so the way this would not work for everybody, like this is what works for me. And this is kind of the point of it is like, I'm here on a 1 or 2 days in the week is typically what I do. There were early on, I did it more like three days a week. The last couple of years, I'm more like 1 to 2, and I feel like that sort of maintains enough for me. So I don't feel the need to do it 3 times a week, but I could if I wanted to. During hunting season, this was a huge deal for me to like, I would strength train off and on throughout the year, but when hunting season would roll around, I'd always quit. And so then I'm going back to ground. This I have not stopped doing for like the last 3 years. And if that's my goal during the fall is once a week, I at least do the strength training once a week and I maintain that baseline. And I've been in, like I said, I've been able to do that for 3 years now, which is just so different than what I used to do. So anyways, I'd go do a set of those 3 exercises. I only do 3 reps each. I'm in the 3 to 5 rep range. And then I just go back to my desk and I work for like 7 to 10 minutes or whatever it is that I'm doing. I'm kind of like chopping up my thing. So I focus on different tasks at my desk and stuff. And I do that for 10 sets. So I end up doing 30 reps of every one of those. And at the, like, again, it never feels like I'm destroying myself, but it's this consistency of doing it over and over. And then I guess the other point that I should point out here, which I think I told you about, is like when I first started doing that, I started with what to me was a very, very low weight. Like I think I just had 95 pounds on the barbell, which I had some level of strength training, but you want to start at a point, or at least I started at a point where it felt like I was not even working.
Absolutely.
Like just at a very, very low weight. And if like for pull-ups, if you could only do one, just do one. And if you could do two the next week, whatever, but you add 5 pounds to the barbell every month or every 2 weeks. And if you do it consistently for 3 years, like the progress that you can make, I'd never done anything like that, with that much consistency. And it's worked really well for me.
Yeah, no, I really like the setup. I think it's good. And the point about not crushing yourself is super important, because a couple of things that you want to look at is, like, first of all, there's something called supercompensation. And so your body and your brain's main objective is to keep you alive. And so let's say that you start with 95 pounds. As you start to adapt to that, your body adapts beyond lifting 95 pounds because it wants it to cost you less, right? And so that's a really good point. The setup's great. The rep ranges for building strength are great. So like all of that's pretty dialed in. The one thing that I would consider is alternating in some kind of posterior chain work. And so switching every once in a while out Zerkers for RDLs, you know, but RDLs, something like that would be a good thing to start to develop the back of your body. And then, you know, at times varying rep ranges, but one thing I want to talk about before I miss it. You said you started off with 3 days a week and now you're down to 1 to 2, and then you maintain 1 during hunting season. And something that people need to know is, first of all, like maintaining anything during hunting season is big because it's going to keep you resilient. It's going to keep you and help you with all the things that we talked about before. But what we know is that it only takes a third of the volume that it took you to build any kind of strength and muscle to maintain that same level of strength and muscle. So
I'm pretty sure, like, I can hear Jordan in my head telling me that. And I have a feeling like I was like, what can I do where I can just keep going through hunting season and not go back to square one?
Absolutely. So it only takes a third of the volume to be able to maintain it. So if you're training, you know, 3 days a week to start building your strength, and then you back down to one during hunting season, that's totally cool because it only takes about a third of the volume. So that's really good. And then the other thing is like, you know, varying your rep ranges sometimes would be a good idea. Maybe doing some 6 to 8, stuff like that. And then adding in some unilateral training. So lunges, single arm presses, single arm rows. If you varied that up from time to time, like you'd have a really well-rounded strength program.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. That makes sense. And that was, I was kind of looking like what else would I layer on, or what would you, cause I've been, obviously early on, you had that 5 pounds of the barbell and it's like nothing, but now I've gotten to the point where I'm more at a plateau. I haven't really tried to go beyond where I'm at right now for a while. And the last increase was the hardest one, the most difficult one for me to do. And again, I'm not super motivated to keep adding weight to that bar just because I'm comfortable with where I'm at. But then at the same time, like, okay, well, I'm comfortable. What should I do next? What should I do from here?
So a couple of different things that you could consider is, you know, if you're going to do 2 days a week, do one day of your normal program that you have now. And then on the other day, do all unilateral work. So like step ups, presses with one arm, rows with one arm, things like that. And then, you know, as you cycle from, you know, it's March 31st now, from like now before hunting season, you know, do a month where you're doing your normal 3 reps. Then the next month go up to like the 6 to 8 rep range. The month after that, go down to maybe 1 or 2 reps per exercise, and then come back up to your 3, because adaptation, undulating programming increases adaptation more than anything else. So that's just having that up and down, that varied loading will do a lot for you. But if you did those two things, you would start to notice even more marked results for sure.
Okay. If you were like, if I'm at 3 reps at the weights that I'm at right now, and I wanted to do a 6 to 8 rep range, like how much weight would you peel off the bar? Like from a percentage?
The easiest way to do that is to think about, so if you, with your sets of 3 with 200 right now, with your Zercher squats, at the end of that set, how many reps do you think you have left in the tank afterwards?
The squat is probably the one where I have the most excess capacity. This is the other thing. It's sort of inherent to my program, is that I want to walk over to the barbell, do 3 different exercises, and walk back to my desk. This is how it started. Like I'm more committed to it now. So I probably could do more, but at the time it was like this is what I kind of skipped over this, but the problem for me was being busy at work and thinking about, okay, now I got to carve out an extra hour to like go do my warm up, do my workout. And so the way I tricked myself into doing this was that, hey, I'll just develop a program where I can walk away from my desk, do a set, come back and keep working. Right. So it's kind of silly when you think about it, but
it's not silly at all. I think it's great.
It has worked incredibly well. And so, but in doing that, I was like, all right, I have to design a workout that I can use the same weight on the barbell, and I don't want to be changing the weights between sets. Sure. That was why I did that. So to get back to your question, Zercher is probably where I have the most excess capacity because the other exercises are more limiting to me. The incline bench press is I'm not nearly as strong there as with 200 pounds on the bar as I am in the Zercher squat.
I mean, doing 200 pounds for sets of 3 on an incline bench press is good. That's solid, man. That's pretty strong. So one of the things that you could look at, so how would you know what weight to use? So let's go back. So how many reps would you say you have left in the tank at the end of a Zercher squat set?
For the Zercher? Man, I've never even tried. Now you make your, I'm curious. Like I want to try it now. Like I feel like I could probably do at least 6.
Okay. So
double the reps.
3 reps in reserve, right? So that's how we, that's how we program and moderate intensity with our programming. And so what you would do is take some off and say, you know, if you want to be, when you're building strength, you want to be somewhere in the 2 reps in reserve to 5 reps in reserve kind of platform. And so what you do is maybe drop it down to 180 and do a set of 6, and then ask yourself, well, how many reps could I have done with that weight? And then if you're like, well, I could have done 9 more, then you're like, okay, well then I need to bump it up a little bit.
Right.
But if you could have done, you know, if you were like, well, I only had 3 or 4, then, you know, you're probably in a good place. And then, you know, another way to approach that too would just be, let's say you go down to 180 for those sets of 6 for your Zurchers. You could use the same weight on the bar for your incline press. You just do less reps for that, you know?
Yeah.
And so that way you kind of, your reps won't be exactly the same. It still won't take too much thinking, and it won't create the lag time of having to change weights and do all that kind of stuff. And so the easiest thing to do is, like, instead of trying to think about percentages and all that kind of stuff, you would just do reps in reserve, and because it's easier to figure it out. And then also, you know, you don't have the same amount of capacity every day. And that's one of the reasons, back in the day, we always did percentage training and all that kind of stuff. Well, you know, 85% of your max that you tested last time might actually be 95% of your max today, because your body's always in flux. And so it's just an easy way to figure out what weight you need to use from day to day.
Yeah. Now you just, that honestly, that seems like the most, given everything, all the possible ways I could trip myself up, the easiest way to do that is if I'm doing 2 of these a week, I keep one of them the same, so I know I've got my baseline, and whenever my second day is, this week it'll probably be Friday, I'm just going to take 20 or 30 pounds off the bar, do more reps, I'll do non-weighted pull-ups and do more, because I have not done anything higher than 3 reps for quite a while. So if I just switch that up to two different days, different rep ranges, that's a layered change to what I'm already doing. I'm kind of excited about that already.
Yeah. And you'll be surprised at how fast, like, even just your strength improves, you know?
Yeah.
So
it would be really interesting to see, what happens on my baseline day by mixing that in that higher rep range, just to see what happens.
And because it comes back to even what we were talking about with conditioning, because you're doing more volume. So more volume means more reps. I mean, it means more opportunities for your body to get efficient with that movement, you know? But one of the things that I really like about your program that I didn't write down as a note, but is just popping up to me now, is oftentimes people change exercises way too frequently.
Yep.
Way too frequently. And so they don't make as much progress because they're inefficient. So you have to relearn how you're doing something. You have to figure out how much intensity you can put into that exercise. And so, you know, we'll change stuff up. Like, so for the past 3 months, all of our folks in, like, Backcountry Ready and stuff, they've done the same main strength exercise, because you want to build skill so you can have more output, so you can put more into it. And so one of the things that I do really like is your consistency with the same movements. Now, it is good to add variation and variety, but consistency with the same movements is huge. Really good idea.
I'm glad you said that, because that is one of these other things that I have awareness of. That's why it works. You can go on Google every day and Google up, you know, give me a 5 exercise routine that's great for this or that, right? And 5 new exercises, you got to learn all 5. You got to get the form right. You got to figure out what your baseline weight is, what actually works. All of that is startup friction. And that's what I was trying to engineer out.
Absolutely.
Was that startup friction. And you can make so much progress by, again, picking 3 exercises and continually building on them. But obviously, you're going to reach a point where some variation and variability makes sense. But if nothing else, eliminate that startup friction and get a good core exercise in.
Yeah, it's friction from a cognitive standpoint, right? Because it's going to take mental energy. It's going to do all that kind of stuff. But it's just like variety to a degree is important, depending on what you want the result to be. But getting really good, even if it's at 4 or 5 exercises and getting good at those and rotating them through, and just because then you can train them with the intensity that you need to. But like, even like, so if you start to alternate, like, you know, 3 weeks you do your Zurchers and then the next 3 weeks you do RDLs, you'll be surprised at how much stronger you are the next time you come back to your Zurchers because of just first of all, training the back of your body to be more resilient. But like, you're at the point where some variation would be beneficial to you.
Yeah. Yep. And that totally tracks with kind of what I've been experiencing. And I've got I don't have that fear of falling off the wagon because I've got the habit built in.
Right.
So I can tolerate some of that variability. Now, if I can learn something, I can invest a little bit of cognitive energy to build something else out and then work that in while maintaining the baseline.
Yeah.
So.
And then the thing about it is like everything could be periodized, right? So like if you know that you have, like, let's say you're going to work out on a Tuesday and you know that Tuesday is a big cognitive load for day for you. Well, don't try anything new on Tuesday.
Right.
Do it on Friday when you have more space in your brain, you know, and just mm-hmm. setting things up that way so you manage your energy properly is a really smart thing to do as well.
Yeah. Yeah. That's outsmarting myself is it's half the battle, at least.
Make it easy, man. That's the thing.
Exactly.
Is like willpower is just such an expendable resource. And
yep.
I think people get yep. frustrated with themselves because they think they just have to will their way through it. But like setting up for your environments for success is a way better strategy than just telling yourself that you got to do something, you know.
I would agree with that wholeheartedly. That's for dang sure. Yep. Oh, all right, man. I mean, we covered a ton here. Did we miss anything? Anything that's jumping out at you, like you wanted to make sure we worked that in?
One thing that I would recommend to you as well is if you're not already at some points figuring out how to do some power work. So some jumping, some things like that.
Plyometrics stuff.
Yeah. I mean, to a degree, plyometrics are useful just because of how many steps we take while we're hunting, but also just like basic jumps, like buy yourself one of those slam balls or something off Amazon and just throw that sucker for a handful of reps. Like that would be the one other addition that I would say would be beneficial to you. Yeah. And you could do that. You don't even necessarily have to do it as part of the same session. You know, it could be like one of your weekend days and
something different.
You take 10, 15 minutes to throw the ball or something before and jump before you go on your ruck. And like just adding a little bit of that into your routine would be beneficial as well.
Okay. Love it. Yeah. Appreciate that. We did talk a little bit about this last week, but you are thinking about getting a bird dog.
Oh yeah, dude. Yeah. No, it's not, it's
where's
not,
your, where's your head at?
it's gonna happen. Well, you know, I think I mentioned on the phone, one of my client, he won't mind me saying this. One of my members, one of my clients is Mike Lardy, and he's like, he can like talk to dogs. So, I've been training him for about 3 years now, so he knows me pretty well. And so his recommendation was a wire hair, based on my personality, how much I like to move, what I like to do. So he recommended that. So I have to take the man's consideration into what he says into consideration, you know. So, but I don't know, like I really like Jordan has an American Brittany. I actually have a picture of her on my shirt.
Oh, heck
so,
yeah.
Yeah. So
man, are those shirts available or are those out of stock?
Yeah,
now?
Yeah, yeah. That, well, I can tell you the story about how I came up with that phrase too.
Love that.
But yeah, so I loved her. I mean, I like English setters. I like all those dogs, but you know, I've been around a lot of bird dogs. The funny thing is I've never been around a wire hair. So, I have to go get some experience and see like, yeah, is this kind of dog for me? But that's where I'm leaning. And I plan to, the grouse are coming back here in Pennsylvania. They're doing better. And so I'd like to get out and do some more grouse hunting and then also take some trips out west to hunt chuckers and stuff like that. So that's what I'm thinking right now. I'm open to suggestions and I'm open to other influence as well. So, but that's
all right. Well, yeah, you might get some opinions coming from the Birdshot listeners. I'm sure.
I'm open to it, man. Send it my way. I don't profess to know anything. So I'm open,
I love it. Yeah. I was going to ask, like, do you have a dream hunt or something you want to do? But you already mentioned like you're going to Nepal. I mean, you already got like some dream hunts on the bucket list.
Yeah. I mean, I want to do that. And then I've been on a sheep hunt, but I've never got to hunt sheep, but there are financial prohibitions when it comes to things like that. But, I mentioned to you earlier that, Mike went to South Africa to hunt Franklins and stuff like that. And I would really like to do that as well.
All right, buddy. Well, I appreciate the time and all of the knowledge that you've given me and obviously here the listeners. And there will be a link in the show notes for sure to access the sort of the Up and Hunter basic training program that we can focus on from now, April until September. And where can folks go if they want to learn more about what you do and get in contact with you?
Yeah, so the website is humanpredatorpackmule.com. I never change the URL. But the one thing that's great about the website is like I have like 80 articles on there already. So you can go there and read and learn. Human Predator, the Train Smarter Hunt Longer podcast. I have that. And then Instagram is just Pack Mule Training Company. Pack Mule Training Co. Yeah.
Okay. Cool. We will we'll gather up links and include everything for the listeners in the show notes. And again, thanks again, buddy. You and I will have to keep in touch. If you got bird dog questions, grouse questions, fire them my way. And best of luck on your turkey season, man. I'm getting excited right there with you.
I appreciate it, dude. Thank you for having me, and same to you.
All right. Appreciate it, buddy. That does it for this episode of the Birdshot Podcast. Hang on with me for just a second. Thanks for listening, everybody. Hey, everyone. It's your host, Nick, here with one more thing before you go. I want to thank you for joining us for this episode of the Birdshot Podcast presented by Onyx Hunt. Be sure to subscribe and follow the show so you don't miss our next episode. And if you really love the show and want to contribute above and beyond what you already do by listening, you can do so by joining our Patreon community. Click the link in the show notes of this episode to learn more. You can sign up for as little as $5 a month. And if you do, I'll send you some of these Birdshot Podcast can coolers and stickers as a thank you from me. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. We'll catch you on the next episode of the Birdshot Podcast.